carry them in thy bosom as a nursing father beareth the sucking child unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? Am I going to have to carry these snot-nosed all the way home? Where should I have flesh to give unto all this people? They weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I'm not able to bear all this people alone. Now, this is the stupidest one he ever did. You know, what I'm trying to say is I learned by every experience. I've tried not to make some mistakes that Paul and James made. They made some. And I'm saying to you, please don't push the margin, because stupidness dwells in all of us. He asked for something he shouldn't have asked for. And Moses had a perennial stupid spell. When God called him, he says, I can't speak. God said, okay, I'll give you Aaron. Aaron was a thorn in his flesh ever after. The same God that called Moses could have made him speak. Moses, I'll tell you, Aaron was good at talking. Oh, not me, I didn't do this. They just gave me their jewelry. I threw it in the fire, and lo, out came this calf. He was real good with the tongue. And he had a mouth that wouldn't quit. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
You start complaining to God, you're going to get in trouble. That's what I'm scared to death of. I'm wondering what I'm going to get, because I got a performance out of you, but God will get his pound of flesh out of me too. Hope you'll be around to sympathize. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it's too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee. Out of hand, get it done right now, Lord, kill me. If I found favor in thy sight, kill me, Lord. Let me not see my wretchedness, gloom, despair, and agony on me. And the Lord answered his prayer, just like he did with Aaron. The Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be elders of the people, and officers over them. Bring them over to the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down, talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, put it upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. Moses was the loser. He took the Spirit off of Moses and divided it with these elders. And if you know your Bible, these elders were a thorn in his flesh ever after. I've got an ability to be affected by truth in such a way that I could not keep from reorganizing my computer when facts are put in front of me that I didn't know if I tried. I guess it's God's gift that goes along with the gift of teaching. There are people sometimes who think I'm acting and they're stupid. I cannot prevent the reordering of my frame of reference when I confront truth. That's why I say, if I ever blow it as pastor, after the first reaction and the rationale and all the other crap, there won't be anybody I'll blame but me. But I shiver when I think how close this weekend was. And hey, I'm right. Moses was right. These people are misery. But he let his feelings toward them affect his commitments to God. You may say to me, you ought to go on no matter what. Sure, that's what Jesus did. But you forget that I preach not perfection apart from him. And I'm just saying to you, help the old man out. I ain't asking for sympathy, I'm asking for understanding. You've got to give me a break. Over a year and a half ago, I said I always had a gift that I have a little thermostat that tells me when I'm past a certain point. And until I came to this church, I was in a kind of ministry that when I crossed that thermostat, I could go by myself, check into a hotel, and stay there till me and God worked it out. I passed that thermostat over a year and a half ago, or thereabouts, whatever it was, I made it public. And you've got to give me a break. The people that say they love me have got to give me a margin in this budget to where I can breathe in a little bit. Where does anyone minister truth to me? I'm pouring out to you folks all week long. And as F.B. Meyer said, try breathing out three times without breathing in once. I'm not asking for your mercy even. Understanding. I don't want to take too many stupid pills. Oh, I'll keep going, I'm sure. My track record says I will. If I'm smart enough not draw a line that puts me beyond myself. But I still insist. I've told you that the pressure has produced some physical problems. Faith looks at them and tackles them and deals with them. But I've had 1 week off in 9 years. And it's no week off for me to get on a plane and call the next day or be called, that the only way we can survive that day I'm gone is to delay payroll or cut something else or cut this, because we have no margins. Now, I couldn't have said this 9 years ago or even 5 years ago or even 3 years ago, but there are enough people now that if each person would do their called upon portion, which is not unreasonable, this problem could be put behind us once for all. That we have a budget problem is a disgrace. We aren't building giant hotels and monstrous cathedrals. That 22,000 king's houses can't produce $1 million a month is a disgrace. That we can't have 7,000 Gideons who tithe is a disgrace. And I may be stupid. And when you lose a pastor, I tell the people who work for me, and they all know this, when problems and conflict come, I don't want to hear you tell me what the other guy did. You take your 3% and you treat it as though it's 100%. And you trust my fairness to deal with a guy and see without you telling me he's 97% wrong, because I'm going to tell him to take his 97% and treat it as 100%. Don't make me referee between two people trying to rationalize their behavior. But at the same time, I'm aware that their 3% and their 97% is probably a legitimate position. And I can feel their pain, though I have to deal with the only method to cure it. I know the only method to cure my problem is to deal with my problem as though it's all me. But as your teacher, I got to get you to understand, you better deal with your problem as though it's all you. And though your pastor needs to be a bigger giant than he is and may one day become a bigger one, you're still going to be accountable for what you've done. This miserable bunch of Israelites are accountable for what they brought Moses to, as well as Moses is accountable for being stupid. He was. Kill me, I pray thee, out of hand. What a jackass. Let me not see my wretchedness. Look in the mirror, dummy. And the Lord said unto Moses, I'll give you, you want them? I'll divide your spirit with them. Now, since it's God's spirit carrying the load, why did he have to divide it up? The 70 elders couldn't do it. It took the spirit that was on Moses, divided by God and put on the 70, for them to be able to be any help. Well, since it's the spirit of God doing it, why not keep the whole package on Moses? Because Moses was better able to walk in the spirit and be stupid fewer times than the 70 were. He created a problem for himself. Been better off to never ask for a mouthpiece and to never get in this. He got what he wanted. I guess I'm lucky that you didn't have stupid pills same time I did and failed to show up today. Then I would have left and God would have given me a worse congregation. Much worse. And 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, I'd be saying, oh God, why'd you give me this bunch? Why didn't you leave me with Faith Center? And why didn't you leave me with Westcott? Why didn't you leave me in Glendale? Now, I hope you're learning something about stupidness. If Moses can do it, so can I do it, and so can you. Now, say thou unto the people, they want flesh. Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and you shall eat flesh. Ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt, therefore the Lord will give you flesh, and ye shall eat. Ye shall not eat 1 day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it come out at your nostrils. Old sweet Jehovah. And it be a loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? Now, the message here is, God, why don't you give us a pastor that doesn't yell at us? Give us a sweetie pie. He'll drown you in syrup. Listen to this. Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen. Big man of faith, Moses. Listen to him. Moses said, they're going to eat flesh for a whole month. And Moses says, the men among whom I am are 600,000 footmen. We don't even count the women. Now I said, I'll give them flesh that they may eat a whole month. You're going to kill our flocks? Shall the flocks and the herds be slain for them to suffice them? Shall all the flesh of the sea be gathered together for them to suffice them? Why in the hell are you going to get that much flesh, God? Big man of faith. The Lord said unto Moses, is the Lord's hand short, wax short? Thou shalt see now whether my words shall come to pass unto thee or not. You know, it's really pathetic. God demonstrates this after his big mouth and his stupid pill got him 70 elders that were going to be a thorn in his flesh. And got the power of God divided off of him onto some others. Thou shalt see now whether my words shall come to pass unto thee or not. And Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord, and gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people, and set them round about the tabernacle. The Lord came down in the cloud and spake unto him, and took of the spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the Spirit rested on them, they did prophesy and not cease. Now the people had one voice Now I got 70 guys running around, running off at the mouth. Two of them stayed in the camp. Joshua got mad and Moses still got a stupid pill. What did God? Everybody prophesied. 600,000 men, 3.25 million, all of them prophesying. And there went forth a wind from the Lord, verse 31, and brought quails from the sea. Let them fall by the camp as it were a day's journey on this side and as it were a day's journey on the other side. Round about the camp, as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. 3 feet of quail. 3 feet of quail all around the land. I mean, you know, used to be manna. 3 feet of quail. All around the camp. You can't go forward, backward, sideways without running over quail. At my worst, I'm not as loathsome as acres of dead quail. The people stood up all that day and all that night and all the next day and gathered the quails. He that gathered least gathered 10 homers. That's 90 bushels. The one that gathered the least amount of quail took 90 bushels home. They spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a great plague, otherwise known as one giant bellyache. He called the name of that place Kibroth Hat. Try that again. Kibroth Hatteva, which means the graves of lust, otherwise known as being foundered on your desire. You got what you wanted until you turned green. That's known as Kibroth Hatteva. Because there they buried the people that lusted. Dead on quail. Manna looks pretty good. And the people journeyed from Kibroth Hatteva unto Hazeroth, and abode at Hazeroth. And Miriam and Arim spake against Moses because of his Ethiopian woman, the one he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. Now, Aaron is going to prove his worth. I can't speak, Lord. Okay, I'll give you Aaron. Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. And they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? I bet you Moses would take their murmuring. Time he got done burying the dead from the quail, the people would have been happy. In essence, it's best for both sides to pick up the pieces and march in faith. Now I can tell you what's coming up. They get to the promised land. Next chapter. After Aaron and Miriam get taken care of, and one of the great tragedies is, when God smote Miriam with leprosy, the whole camp had to just wait while her leprosy was cleansed. The sin of Miriam held the whole camp up. But then they come to Kadesh Barnea. That's chapter 13 coming up. And they send the 12 spies into the promised land. And the 12 spies come back and say, it's just exactly what God said it was. Milk and honey. But there's giants there. And the men that went up, except for Caleb and Joshua, said, "We be not able to go up against the people. They're stronger than we are." There we saw the giants, verse 33, chapter 13, the sons of Anak. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. Wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return unto Egypt?" And they said one to another, "Let us make a captain, let us return unto Egypt." And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of Israel. They had plenty of candidates. Moses, by his stupidity, had gotten them 70 spirit-filled men. I challenge you to find those 70 elders doing much in this chapter. Furthermore, they were all over 20, which means they all got killed in the wilderness. You don't find 70 elders standing up there with Moses and Aaron and Caleb and Joshua doing their part. It's a real sad chapter. The Lord came down now and said to Moses, because the Lord is angry at their disbelief, and there's a whole chapter in the New Testament, the book of Hebrews, about this. His wrath was so great, he strode their bones through the wilderness. The Lord said unto Moses, now verse 11 of chapter 14, "How long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I've showed unto them? I'm going to smite them with pestilence, disinherit them, and make of thee a greater nation, mightier than they." God's ways, not our ways. Here's Moses, stupid, praying to be killed about a chapter ago. Now God's ready to kill all of those people and start over with just Moses. I guess he'd let him keep his three wives. Could go make a nation out of him. So when you weigh it in balance, everybody gets chances to start over up to a point. And Moses begins to pray for the people. Says, because the Lord, if you kill all these people as one man, verse 15, 14 chapter, then all the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness. Now, I took my share of the blame for any stupid pill I might take. And the measure of discouragement that can come to a pastor when people let him down. But there is a high calling that is of the caliber of what Moses is saying here. We have, because we have been called to this work, we have a testimony to deliver. If we don't make it, there's no escape. We are accountable for not having fulfilled the calling God's given us and dared to believe the gates of hell shall not prevail, and that we can go eating this manna to the promised land. And he besought the Lord not to wipe them out. The Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word, but as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. And because these have tempted me now these 10 times and have not hearkened to my word, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoke me see it. Caleb, he's going to make it because he has another spirit. The Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron and said, as truly as I live, your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, all that were numbered of you according to your whole number from 20 years old and upward that have murmured against me, and all your little ones. They said that I brought them here to destroy them in the wilderness. Your little ones I will bring in. They shall know the land which these parents have despised. That wipes out the 70. The children are going to make it under 20. For every day you spied out the land 40 years, you are going to wander in the wilderness. And ye shall know my breach of promise. God got fed up and decided he's going to breach his promise. That blows your mind. Ye shall know my breach of promise. I will surely do it unto this evil congregation that are gathered against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, there they shall die. And the men that Moses sent to search the land that didn't have the faith to believe they could make it, even these men that did bring up the evil report, died by the plague before the Lord that day. And Joshua and Caleb, they're going to be allowed to go in. Moses told these sayings to the children of Israel. You're going to die, folks. You push God too far this time, he's going to kill you. You didn't believe him, and you weren't willing to move in faith. And they said, huh? You going to kill us? We'll go. We'll go now. You held a gun to our head, we'll go. Brinkmanship. I mean, now we'll take on the giants. That's better than dying. Moses said, no, you can't go. But we're going. No, you waited one day too late. They went, and they died. They got the stuffing licked out of them. And in the New Testament, the book of Hebrews opens a chapter early on. We, in the New Testament dimension, better fear lest we wait one day too long to pick up a promise of God. That straw that broke the camel's back, in spite of their previous bickering, this time they waited one day too long. And every one of them over 20 years of age, except those accepted by God, were slain in the wilderness. And we're leaving some cities, but I got it finished where I was heading. I hope you listen to this tape 100 times and let it saturate into your brain. I hope you read these chapters 100 times. There's room for mistakes, and you pay for your mistakes on both sides of the fence. But the long and short of it is, the men of faith made it in. Those that didn't have faith didn't. And this ministry is at a crossroads that calls for decisions of faith. I'm telling you, the ones that made it were the ones that got faith again. Simple as that. Better have the plague from the quail and let it drive you to faithing than to make the mistake of losing your faith. God's patience wears out. And this is a ministry that has encamped at Kadesh Barnea more than once. So close. And all it takes is maximum effort to push us over the hill. And I think the basic problem we have is some of you just get weary with well-doing. The promise of Galatians 6 is you'll reap in due season if you faint not. It's faint or faith. Now, I'm prepared to take all the lumps that I have to take for fainting, but not all of my reactions are fainting. In fact, the majority of my reactions are a faithful pastor with righteous indignation because you let yourself get blinded and forget the high calling that God has chosen you for. We have a chance to strike a blow only like those that took their stand with the Reformation. The history books look back, and who wouldn't want to join the reforming forces? But it didn't look that way when Luther started out. Now, some of you don't know it. Some of you are so heathen in background, you don't really know what an impact we're having on the establishment church world. And an impact because they don't really know how to, they don't know how to deal with my teaching. They can't quarrel with that. They got to argue to the man. They look and see the crowd not there. They say, well, that just goes to prove that there's something wrong with his life, because it's obvious that he's teaching the. They can't argue with that. So you become an excuse for them to say, well, in spite of how accurate or good the teaching may be, there's something wrong with the man. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening. The minute that we became this profile, the obligation's on you. Now, I don't want to lose the message in my willingness to point out the proneness in all of us, including your pastor, to get weary with well-doing and faint. And I don't want to lose the message in the honest ability to say, I can faint just like you can faint, just like Paul prayed that he wouldn't be an outcast while preaching to others. But I'm still a fair man. I'm going to tell you something. The blame in this case was about 3% mine, 97% those of you that let us down. In between is a core of people that have done their best. They've stood with me. They've been there. They have given to the maximum, and they're smart enough to know my remarks were not addressed to them. But their best couldn't do it. They were the Calebs and the Joshuas. And unless somebody in their carnality want to shift too much blame because you got an honest pastor, those that have that attitude don't deserve an honest pastor. In this case, I'm just hard-headed enough to be hard on myself for my 3%, but in this case, I'm about 3%. The faithless portion of my congregation is 97% and more. We've been to this tree too many times. We've been to this place too many times. I've had to tell you too many times how important a little thing is, like dialing a telephone when you're watching. Don't give me this baloney about, well, I dial and I can't get through. You sit there and you keep dialing. You'll get through eventually. You say, well, I want to listen. God and you know whether or not you dialed the whole time that a 1-0 was playing. I make a big distinction between when I want you to call and when I want you to listen. I should never, with the audience we have, I should never look at those phones. Any time I'm calling or asking for calls, I should never look at those phones and see one on the hook. Your normal experience should be, you got to dial an auto dialer. You got to get an auto dialer to really get in, just leave it going. You should look on the King's House on Sunday as you're a success when you get turned away. You should look on these phones as a success when you get a busy signal. And you should call till you get a busy signal. That's why I say, the formulas are too simple. You haven't done anything when you've tithed. You've just really opened the door to your own blessing. Sacrifice starts with the offerings. So let nobody think that this man who is capable of seeing his stupid streaks and deal with them is so stupid he doesn't know where the heavier weight of stupidity lies. I have got a hardcore congregation that's been through the wars with me for years, and I've got some soft hangers on that need to be sorted out and get some iron in their soul. And understand that you are lucky enough to have come in the last hour of the work day, and you will receive a reward equal to those that work through the heat of the day. But you have been chosen, and once God makes that choice, you can't escape it. You'll bear the consequence of not having done your part too. But the central message still is from a pastor that not only loves the word, but loves the people that respond. You can start over. But don't wait too long. The message of Hebrews is don't wait one day too long. And literally, have some trauma about it. Be a little afraid that when you hear the message and that intuitive imageness of God in you says, this is the truth and I know it. Don't wait around. Today, if you hear his voice, harden not your heart. How do you harden your heart? You get your mind going, arguing with what your basic instinct tells you. Part of the imageness of God in us is that intrinsic ability to recognize truth when you first hear it. The problem I have with a lot of people is you substitute your brain at that point in argument with what you know going out the gate is true. And you let the flesh tell you, well, you're going to watch a while before you support. And don't lay any trips on me about people that have burned you before. Nobody else you ever listened to, did it ring the way it rings when you're listening right now? If they burned you, it couldn't ring that way. So, just let me let you know. In this case, my congregation pushed me too far, too long, and took none of the hints and early warning signals that I communicated night after night. It's like I used to as a teacher. Thank God we got order in the church now. But when I first came, it was like most churches. People didn't know how to act in God's house. Nobody ever got chewed out by me without some warnings that if they had any brains, could have saved them the public embarrassment. I sent plenty of signals. Now, you say, well, you had a victory today. Why are you beating it to death? People who've got any brains know why I'm beating it to death. I want the nail clenched. We've been here before. We've had the discouragement and we've had the response. We're entitled to a relationship that is beyond brinkmanship. We will never reach a relationship. I'm telling you this, we'll never reach a relationship that the spirit's willingness is not overpowered by the flesh's weakness. That's par for the course. But when the signals are sent out, you start doing something about it. That's the difference between pros and amateurs. You watch the professional football teams. You can't believe what happens to some teams in the first half and the contrast in the second half. Same people, but some key placed words get them back together again. What I am entitled to expect after 9 years, going into my 10th year, is that you'll read the signals. When the pastor tells you, see, the shame is that I had to let the world that wants to see us go down relish the possibility of what might have happened today. When I should have been able to send out the signals without it going to that point where I'm put by words past the point of return. Now that's an intelligent, mutual respect relationship. I don't play word games with you, never have. And I want this nail clenched until we don't have to go to this point. My mother was called by a lady in her 80s. Crying this week because she heard that I was leaving. That isn't what was said. what was said is if certain things don't happen, which is, by the way, not my style, and my record will prove that. But the tragedy is this person had to. Do you know there are some people that I happen to know are in aged and sick conditions that the tension and stress of these past few days could have killed them? There are some people that depended upon the security of this voice. That's mine to cry about. That's the tragic choice and the responsibility of it that I have to bear. But I'm telling you, in this case, Moses was stupid, reacting the way he reacted to the people. The people were worse. And in this case, I have deserved more consistency from my congregation. And if you think I was kidding when I said, when I first stepped up, I'm mad all over again when I see how many of you are here, because you could have been here. You don't know me at all. Sure, I was glad. Delighted you were there. But surely you also know you can be mad and glad at the same time. You do it to me every time. I've seen it for 9 years. That's what broke my health and strength the early years I was here. Thank God I had a constitution like a horse, or I'd be in the hospital. When you would bring me to the point that I'd leave this chair or draw the line and say you got exactly 5 minutes, the very same people that had watched me for hours would come through. Right or wrong? Now, the best of us that sacrifice consistently, and your pastor deserved better than that, and some of you need to grow up. Because you're going to wait one day too long. Now, I hope the people at King's House 1 had the good sense to answer the phone while I was doing this talking. Now, I believe victory's coming, and I believe that we can turn a corner this day. And furthermore, I haven't said much today, that you've held me up in 3 weeks of negotiation with stations in Los Angeles when I ask a very simple thing. Prove a point. Do you know what those station managers would have been doing if for 3 Sundays in a row you had approved it this way? And you know what I'm going to contend with this week? Convincing them that you did it and would keep doing it if I wasn't forcing the crisis on you. Well, I know the answer to that. I'm going to say, well, suppose you're right. They were still listening to hear about it. So I have an answer. But I don't even want them to have a defense. I want every station in Los Angeles to know we don't need to be on their station. It's a convenience I provide my congregation, and it's a joy that we both want to participate in, and that's why we're willing to pay the current market rate. But we are not going to allow any station to think that they have a throttle hold on us, and this work cannot survive unless we pay exorbitant rates and take whatever dread time they have for us. Claps are probably in order. And I'm also telling stations all across this nation, I'm about had it with some of them on the East Coast. I'll take their dreg time at midnight if they give me Sunday afternoon time, until at least once a week I can talk to them without them poking their eyes open with toothpicks. But you've got to give me that strength of negotiation by proving to an onlooking world we're going to make it. Yeah, now I want to tell you, you don't have to do as much to please me as I do to please you. Because most of you are pretty spoiled. If you don't believe it, go to another church. Go try some leeks. and some garlic and some onions and some cucumbers. Go wade through 3 feet of quail. So I hope we understand each other. Let's go from here. We made it through 1985. Well, I'll take four. We made it through 1984.